Welcome to All Being Well, the podcast for not-profit, charity and social enterprise professionals. My name is Claire Warner and I'm a wellbeing strategist and management coach who helps purpose-driven professionals and organisations to recognise and embrace the benefits of individual and workplace wellbeing. I've created this podcast to help you identify some of the causes of unwellbeing in your work and personal life, and to help and inspire you to put well-being at the centre of everything you do and to reap the benefits. We'll be talking about the different areas where using a well-being focus can have a positive impact and talking to people who've already done so they can share their stories with you. Think of this as your regular guide to well-being beyond the yoga and quinoa. So hello and welcome to episode one of All Being Well. I'm really pleased to be here. I'm really pleased you're here, that you found me. I'm really pleased, I'll be honest. The lazy writer in me is really pleased to have found a form of content I can regularly produce that doesn't need to be written down, let's be honest. So, why another podcast? Well, that's the main reason, really, that I wanted to find a way of sharing some great content about how could you use wellbeing as the driver or as the focus or as the lens by which to improve a number of areas in your life and your work, and to share some really great examples of where people are already doing that. One of the biggest problems I find is that well-being is such an inadequate word that I have to spend a lot of my time talking to people, well, what do I mean by well-being when I talk about workplace well-being or individual well-being? And I guess that really you can't talk about one without the other, or you certainly can't have an impact on one without having an impact on the other. My main focus originally was to try and help people, or try and encourage people to seek out what did they feel they were missing, or what were they doing too much of, or how could they improve their overall well-being? What would make them feel better? What would make them feel like they had better balance, or where were some of the challenges that they could do with some help with? When you look at that, you can't look at that in isolation, because especially for people who work in our sector, for purpose-driven people, so much of what we do, how we define ourselves, how we spend our time, how we do our thing, so much of that is done in work. And absolutely, I'm an amazing advocate for doing what you love every day. But increasingly, I'm also an advocate of, to be able to do that to your best ability, you also need to make sure that you're doing all the other things in your life properly and well, and that you're getting rest, and that you're looking after yourself, that you are taking regular breaks, that you're eating well, that you are keeping hydrated, that you get some form of exercise, that you get yourself outside, that you spend time with people that you love. You do all those things. But what became increasingly obvious was that I couldn't just look at that in isolation, because we spend so much time in work. We need to be able to do some things about changing our well-being in work as well. And so I started looking at more about workplace well-being, about the things that cause unwell-being in the workplace. And that, I guess, is where the majority of my work now comes from. And so is the majority of, well, you can't do one without the other. Neither of them operate in splendid isolation. And so that's why we're here. That's what we're going to be talking about over the next few weeks and months. So today I just wanted to talk to you about, very briefly, there are 8 areas in workplaces that I always encourage people to look as to where they could look to improve well-being before they start looking at yoga and at quinoa and at book clubs and at providing fruit in the office at lunchtime, and about hot topic of debate at the moment, the famous 4-day week. There are other places to look first. Now, I'm not saying that any of those things that I've just mentioned should not be used or should not be done, but they certainly are not the first place I would look, nor are they the first place I would suggest you should be looking when you can improve well-being in the workplace. And we're going to go over these in more detail in coming episodes, but I wanted to tell you today about the 8 areas that I encourage organisations to look they're all with the letter P. So we're going to just very briefly go through those eight P's. These are, if you were to ask me, and I only guess this because I have done the research, I have spoken to so many people, you know, 703 people took part in our wellbeing research in 2018. These are the places that we know we need to focus because these are the regular areas of unwellbeing. So the first P that we look at in organisations is purpose. Now, as I've said, this is a podcast for purpose-driven people. We work in a purpose-driven sector. We all generally do this, do whatever it is we do in this amazing for-good space because we are driven by the purpose of our organisation or by the purpose of the sector as a whole. But very often, in some organisations where there are challenges, it's because there is a disconnect between either individuals and the overall purpose of the organisation or between teams and the overall purpose of the organisation. Now, when I say disconnect, I don't mean that they're not interested in the purpose or that that's not something that inspires them. There is a disconnect in where they see themselves in the positioning of that purpose. They struggle to see or just aren't regularly congratulated and involved and encouraged to see the very, very valuable part they play in the overall achieving of our purpose. And so in some organisations and in some teams in some organisations, you will find individuals who describe themselves as just as something. It's almost as if they perceive there to be a hierarchy in the organisation. And the kind of the superstars are in one area. And like I say, people we talk with will regularly describe themselves as just as something. If that's you, if you're listening to this and you go, that's me, I'm just a whatever it may be. Well, you're not just an anything. Whatever the role is that you do, your organization cannot do without. We are not a fat filled sector with lots of jobs and lots of roles that are unnecessary or that are padding or that we don't have roles to spare. We are a very lean, very, very deliberately mindful sector. And so just because you might be struggling to see exactly where what your little cog turns and how that next bit turns the next bit and how that eventually turns the whole machine that makes your organization tick and allows it to achieve its purpose, one of the key areas we look at is how can we help people to clear some of that fog, or how can we, what is the work we can do to ensure that every person recognizes just how important their job is in the achieving of that overall purpose. The next P we look at, P number two, is processes. What is the impact across organizations, across teams, across groups of people of processes within your organization? And a number of the examples we see are either arcane processes that are based on paper and pen that don't use the technology that we have available to us. Some of them are overly complicated. They are written by a person or they're devised by a person who has taken processes to the nth degree of complexity. And whilst it might work for that individual, it doesn't work for the rest of the organization. Or in some instances, we do see consciously or subconsciously, people create processes that only they understand because they think it makes them indispensable. If they're the only person that understands it, then we have to keep them. So looking at the processes and where are processes having an impact on our well-being, that's P number two. The third P we look at is priorities. How well does your organization articulate its priorities, and how well are those priorities not just communicated, but understood and taken on board by others? Regularly in organizations I go and work in, one of the biggest causes of challenge, causes of unwell-being, is where people will regularly tell you that they think they know what the priorities are for the year, but that there will always be regular instances where someone comes and tells them that actually the thing that they have asked for has a greater priority than the thing that someone else has asked for, or to the area that the individuals were working on originally. And so competing priorities and having to spend time or lose time in clarifying what the priority is. In an ideal scenario, we get everybody's work done and everybody gets happy, but we do know that there are often times where two or three or more people are asking for things to be done within the same time period that physically can't be done. And some of that is about poor communication, and some of it is about lack of clarity around the priorities of either this week or this month or this quarter or this year or however that may be. Sometimes it's because people don't like the priorities, but generally priorities is an area where we can see the clarity of priorities having an impact on people's well-being. The next P we go looking in is planning. We know from research, it's widely understood that people who are involved in planning of their own work, in the planning of how things get done, in the planning of how might we develop things, how might we grow things, how might we, if you are involved in that conversation process, how might we do this? If we want to double our beneficiary numbers, how might we? If we want to double our income, if we want to, whatever it is, but being involved in that planning process, or if you look at the converse of it, not being involved in that planning process can have serious impact on your well-being in the workplace. The areas where things regularly have a negative impact in terms of planning are where people aren't involved. They're just told this is what we're going to do and how and why. Where there isn't a clear plan, they're not quite sure, you know, well, we're not really there yet and we're not really sure what that plan is. And very often where actually plans are communicated to individuals and teams where the individual and team know that there is either a better or a quicker, or they should have been consulted because the plan isn't the way that is going to deliver the overall aim the best. What we forget is we already employ an entire team of specialists. We employ people who do the same, who do their jobs day in, day out. If you want somebody to come up with some suggestions about how might we do this bigger, better, faster, quicker, more often, less often, whatever it may be, surely it's not beyond the wit of man or woman that we ask the people doing the job, if not first, at least as part of that planning process. And so whether or not people have plans, you wouldn't believe the number of organisations we go into where actually individuals don't have a plan, or where there is a plan, but the plan has not had any input to it. So looking into planning is another of our P areas that we go and look as to, well, where could we improve well-being? The next one is progression. What impact does progression have on well-being? Well, this one's kind of twofold, because some people are steady eddies, people who are, they like the role, they like the organization. Oftentimes they like the organization as it was 10 years ago. They're happy in their little niche, in their furrow. They're doing their job and they know how to do it and they're happy at that. But actually the need of the organisation is for progression. It's for being able to move on or do things differently, deliver things in a different way, whatever it is. And sometimes that need by the organisation for progression can cause some jarring and some kind of friction where potentially the organisation might want more progression than the individual does. Also, totally the reverse of that is also very common, that individuals want to come, they want to learn, they want to grow, they thrive on being that sponge-like learning machine that says, I take it all in and I listen, I listen to all these other things that other people are doing. I want to try new things, I want to develop, I really want to progress, I want a career, I want to be able to not just do the job you need me to do today, but I also want to be able to take that job and run with it and make it my own and develop it and develop me and move and progress. And often, particularly in smaller organizations, those opportunities for progression through an organization aren't so clear or aren't so readily achieved. And quite often, regardless of the size of the organization, that drive for progression and that drive for learning and for knowledge and for growth and for how might we is sometimes seen as a threat. It's seen as a, how often have you heard people say, well, but what if we do that? We pay for that, or they go on that training and then they leave. Well, I guess the course of most of our careers these days is the vast majority of us do not have a job for life. The vast majority, that's not saying people don't, but certainly less so now than in generations gone by. Jobs for life are not what people expect. We now would expect a varied career. In fact, often when we're looking for new recruits, we're looking for that variety. We're looking for a set of new experiences or skills or things being done in a different way. Now, if we don't allow opportunities for progression and for growth and for learning and for the very big motivational input that all of those can deliver, what we get left with is colleagues and team members who feel stunted, who feel like they're having their wings ever so slightly clipped or very much clipped. They don't get that driver that says that has that great passion and that great motivation behind it. And in a number of cases, that can be the cause of somebody leaving, not the fact that they learnt and they grew and they developed. And let's be honest, if a person's going to leave anyway, which most people eventually do, well, surely, as an organisation looking to deliver its best with the resources it has available, surely we're better off by taking advantage of that knowledge and that thirst and that hunger and that desire to grow. And like I say, and the passion and the productivity and the performance that comes with that. Now, that's not to say that we're suddenly able to find these immense training budgets, or we suddenly are able to give people enhanced or inflated or new roles because the job that they were employed to do still needs doing. But there are ways that we can absolutely harness and embrace people's desire for progression. And as in those two examples, if somebody doesn't want to progress, but the organization does, or if somebody does want to progress and the organization doesn't really want them to, there is frequently a well-being impact in both of those two instances. Okay, so the next P is performance. Now, looking at where performance has an impact on well-being, there are a number of examples. The first one is where performance isn't managed particularly well, where poor performance isn't managed well, where there is a perception that some people are getting away with, or some people aren't as committed to, or some people just behave badly, but where poor behaviour or poor performance aren't dealt with very well in an organisation. And that can have huge impacts on a number of areas of well-being. It can have a huge impact on the well-being of the person who potentially is aware they're not performing but don't really know how to get out of it, and is potentially scared of saying, I don't know how to do this. It also tends to have a negative impact on the well-being of the person who is their line manager, who doesn't know how to manage them out of it. And it also is having a negative impact on the well-being of those around them who, because it's right that it shouldn't be so, we shouldn't know the details of what is happening in the personnel relationships of our colleagues. But we perceive that, well, other people aren't pulling their weight, or this person behaves badly and it's not being checked, or this person just isn't working on it. Whatever that perception is, if there is deemed to be an area or a person or a team where that don't work as hard or that don't perform well, that has such a negative impact and does have a negative impact on well-being. Likewise, performance and being encouraged, looking at performance development rather than performance management, looking at how can we take the whole topic of performance and make it into something really positive rather than something that has negative connotations. Well, that just has the totally reverse. It has an uplifting, it has a rising tides lifts all boats virtuous circle to it. So performance is another area where we do look at, well, where is performance and how performance is dealt with or managed or all those kind of things. How is that impacting well-being? So we've done purpose, we've done progression, we've done processes, we've done planning, we've done priorities, we've done performance. The final two in my eight P's, perfectionism is number seven. I caveat this. I've only spent about 8 months working outside of the not-profit sector, but what I have seen of what other sectors look like or behave like, I would hazard a guess that the not-profit sector has within it a far higher degree of perfectionism or people with perfectionist tendencies than there are in many other sectors. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't perfectionists all over the place. There are people with perfectionist tendencies. But with that driver sitting behind us, that passion and that purpose sitting behind what we do that says the work I do every day has a really positive impact on the delivery of my organization's vision and its mission. And I live by its values. And I myself am driven by purpose and collectively, we are this vehicle for change. Well, sometimes that perfectionism can take over. Sometimes we can find entire teams or organizations of perfectionists. What that can do is, you know, I guess it sounds ironic to say that an organization of perfect working or of perfectionism can have negative impact on well-being, but it absolutely can. Because perfectionism is often one of the drivers, not the only driver, but it's one of the drivers of individual and well-being. It's one of the drivers of ultra long hours. It's one of the drivers of feelings of guilt or of having not done enough. It's one of the things that says, while I'm not working, I'm not helping deliver this purpose. Therefore, I have to do it. I have to do it at perfect. And so one of the areas we regularly look at with organizations is, well, what does genuinely need to be perfect? And what does just need to be done? And I don't like using that term, just need to be done, because we also find in most of the organizations we work with, or most of the people we work with, that most people's done is already pretty flipping awesome. And yes, there is some professional pride in it that says, I'd like to do it a bit better next time, and I'd like to do this, and I'd like to improve this, and that's fine. But to have a driving force that says everything has to be perfect, or everything has to be my perception or your perception or somebody's perception of perfect, what it can do is it can actually stunt growth, because we wait for what our perception of perfect is before we do anything. Whereas if we just said, well, let's get this bit a bit better, and then let's deliver that, and then let's move on, let's work in sprints, let's do what we can and then do what we can again, it's not halting that growth. It's not stunting any kind of growth or development. It's just saying, let's move it on a little bit. And don't forget, there are areas that we've already perfected. They're fine. We can just keep delivering them. We can do the rinse and repeat cycle. And so an area we work with teams and organizations is, what's already there? What's already absolutely in its maturity stage? It's there. It's you know, it might need the odd bit of tinkering. You might need to change a color this year, or you might need to change something ever so slightly. But a lot of the things we've already spent years perfecting, we don't need to carry on attempting to perfect the already perfect. So which are the areas where we can apply rinse and repeat? And which are the areas where we can say, we want to develop this or this? Or actually, do you know what, this really does need this bit? Find the bits that really do need to be perfect. I'm not saying don't deliver anything to perfectionism, but find the bits that do need to be delivered to perfect. And don't forget that you're good or you're done is already really, really good. The final P in the eight that we look at is people. People, I leave it to the last, it's the most important. Have you got the right people in the right roles? Are your people happy? Are your people well supported? Are your people, do your people have access to all of the other seven P's? What is the people management like? What is the leadership like? What is the, do we treat people as individuals? Do we treat people as humans? Do we care? Do we do all the things that make us human? Do we treat our people, the people we rely on to deliver our purpose, do we treat them as well as we can? Do we value them just as much as either our beneficiaries or the subject of our cause? Or because without people, we can't deliver any of this. And so where are their skills gaps? Where are their people gaps? Where do we physically need more people? Where is it where some people are a problem, and how do we manage when people are problems? But people tends to be the area where we find the challenges that have been left. We don't know how to challenge them, basically. They don't know how to put them right. They don't want to offend anybody. They mistake being nice with being kind. They've attempted to tackle something and it hasn't worked, and now they don't know what to do. And so people is an area where we find we're really able to impact well-being quite significantly. And why those eight P's? Well, because those eight P's help make up what we are and what we do and how we do it and why we do it. They all interlink. They are all indeed their own little cogs that help drive each other. And they're all the things that say, this is what we are, this is what we do, this is how we do it, this is why we do it. And once we've been through and we've been through those eight areas, then let's go and have a look at, well, what can we now do? Having sorted some of those problems out, what can we do to help the bits around the edge? Is a four-day week something we should be considering? I'm going to do an entire extra separate episode on that. Is, are there social aspects of work that we need to be improving? Do we need to be providing yoga and other activities at lunchtime? Do we need to be looking at putting wellbeing programs in for our staff that don't say, we've assumed this is what you want, that say, tell us what you want. Tell us what it is that now we've gone through some of these nuts and bolts areas that we as an organization can help deliver for you or with you about other areas of your wellbeing. And it might be around nutrition, and it might be around exercise, and it might be around finding hobbies. It could be around a whole host of things. But certainly I know in the organizations we work with, when we go through and say, these are the areas we want to look through and see where we can impact workplace well-being, most people would prefer us to go through our eight P's before we start talking about, let's put some fruit in a kitchen at lunchtime. So that's where we work in the area of workplace well-being. When I say we at the moment is me, Kate, who is my VA. I'm also currently working with an organizational psychologist. I have taken on some of their time as an associate, and I've taken on time of another Kate, who's an HR specialist. We're gradually growing the team. Workplace well-being is something that I guess most of you hadn't heard of 5 years ago. I certainly didn't know what it looked like or sounded like, or how to start influencing it and bringing it into workplaces that I worked in. This is it for episode one. I hope you like what you've heard. I hope it's given you some food for thought for in your own workplaces. All being well, I hope you'll come back next week and hear some more. Bye-bye. To find out more, to join my mailing list, and to be notified of when new blog and podcast episodes are launched, head to claire-warner.com. That's Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E. Choose subscribe and sign up. While you're there, take a look in the freebies section. There are some downloads in there around workplace and individual well-being that you might find useful.